Welcome back to the Real Talk with Dana podcast, where we talk all things nutrition, health, fitness, and mindset with a healthy side of sarcasm. I'm your host, Dana Montes of Real Food with Dana. I'm a nutritionist and body image coach, teaching women how to heal their relationship with food and their bodies, ditch the diet cycle for good, and truly thrive with real food, one delicious meal at a time. Guess what time it is for you to listen to episode 101 of this podcast. I cannot believe that it has been 100 episodes, more than 100 episodes now, but instead of gushing about that, I did that for 20 minutes last week. So I wanted to thank you guys again for coming along on this crazy ride that we call a podcast, and I really hope that you enjoyed last week's episode. If you missed it, I talked about where the podcast started, where it has been over the last 2 years of 100 plus episodes, and how my philosophy has changed over the years and kind of where I'm taking the direction of the podcast going forward. So today's episode is one of those nutrition science type episodes that I was teasing last week with a clinician who is immersed in the functional medicine world, but not necessarily in the non-diet culture world, but who takes a non-diet approach to therapeutic elimination protocols and functional medicine. And so this is one of those people for whom, if you were only in the non-diet culture world, you probably would never seek this person out or hear their expertise, which is unfortunate because they are fantastic, as you will see. But our conversation with Dr. Will Cole today, in the conversation, we're focusing on nutrition science from an intuitive eating middle ground while talking about bioindividuality and how body image and stress play into health and finding freedom from food, which you might never expect to hear from someone who has previously done a lot of work in the elimination diets and in particular keto world. So with that in mind, disclaimer here. On this episode, we're talking about how it's so important to do the mindset work before you can really get to the macro anti-inflammatory work, which sometimes involves making some food changes, most of the time also involves removing non-food triggers. So if you feel like even hearing someone talk about making these kinds of food changes in particular may be triggering for you or put you right back into yo-yo dieting mode, then the end of this episode might not be for you. But I would still encourage you to listen to at least the first 35 or 40 minutes because there is some fantastic information in here about managing inflammation in a totally non-food related way and talking about stress around food and body image and finding food peace that I know you guys are going to love. And just one update slash administrative note before we get to the actual interview and episode. This is going to be the last episode of 2019. There's no new episode next week because it is Christmas. So the next episode will be coming out on January 1st. Thank you so much for coming back on the podcast. The last episode you were on, I'm pretty sure it was like 70 episodes ago. So it's been a while. So tell the listeners what you've had going on since, I guess, last September when you were last on the show.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me back. I appreciate it. A lot has happened in this year and a half, or not even quite a year and a half, just a little over a year. So the last time we talked, my first book had just come out. My day job's never changed. My day job is consulting patients around the world via webcam and really immersing myself in the functional medicine component to their health journey and finding out the root reasons of why they're struggling. And that's never changed. So during the week, I consult patients online, and then long weekends, I get to go to different cities and speak about functional medicine and about ketotarian. So that's what I've been doing for the past year since we talked last. And I also was working on the finishing touches of my second book, which just came out. It's called The Inflammation Spectrum. And the concept is just finding out what your body loves to find food peace. And then also I started co-hosting Goop Fellas, which is a podcast for Goop, which is Gwyneth Paltrow's wellness brand. So Gwyneth and Elise host the main podcast. And then our podcast is the first spinoff. It's called Goop Fellas, and it's co-hosted by me and Seamus Mullen, my friend, who's an amazing chef. And we talk about transformations and talk to all these really amazing experts in their space. And yeah, so I've been doing that. And then obviously I co-host Keto Talk for the past 2 years. We're on a little bit of a sabbatical right now. Jimmy's taking a break from it all, but we'll pick that back up too. Yeah, so it's very busy around, been a busy year for sure since we talked last.
Yeah, wearing many hats, which is, you know, always a good thing because then you can spread your expertise everywhere. And it's funny because so in the over the past year, I've definitely kind of changed the trajectory of my business and been focusing on more of the clinical side of things, but with a like non-diet kind of lens, right? As opposed to last time when we talked, when I was still kind of focusing on Whole30 stuff. But it's interesting because I feel like, and we spoke about this a little bit before recording, that even though you wrote a book called Ketotarian, you still have a very middle ground approach to kind of everything that you're doing, right? And especially with this book, The Inflammation Spectrum, and this is why I kind of appreciate your philosophy so much, is like even someone who wrote a book about being keto plant-based, you say specifically in this book and in the last book that like you'll never say that one approach is best for everyone because everyone is so completely different with their bio-individuality.
Totally. I mean, that's the heart of functional medicine, is it's finding out what your body loves and hates. And that's definitely a message in Ketotarian and all the ways to do it. We talk about cyclical Ketotarian and seasonal Ketotarian and moderating your carbs and staying in ketosis. I mean, there's so many ways to do that. And that's just born out of me consulting patients and seeing there is not a one-size-fits-all approach. And anybody that says that is not consulting patients, I would assume, because that you, if you hung your hat on one way for everyone, you're going to really, you're going to be proven wrong all day long. So it's, you have to have that intellectual flexibility. And that's the duality of functional medicine. It's the science, which is the research and the data and the labs and all that stuff. And then the other side of that is the art of functional medicine and knowing the space in between the labs and the space in between the words and using life as a lab and what works and what doesn't in just real life for somebody, because you have to take into consideration preferences and emotions and schedules and all that variability. So that's in both of the books because of my experience in functional medicine. So I appreciate your kind words on that.
Of course. And it's so funny too, because what you just described is not what sells or what is clickbaity or what is popular, right? And so that's why, I mean, it's so great that we're finally getting some people in the, you know, higher echelons of like the wellness space that are saying like, no, there is no one way that'll work for everyone, because that is what is clickbaity. That is what is popular. That is what gets, you know, hundreds of thousands of people sharing something, is when you share the latest headline that, oh my God, you know, coconut oil causes cancer or whatever it is. And it's just like all of us practitioners are just sitting here cringing, is like, because we know there are going to be so many patients and clients and just general public that are sharing this. But it's so hard when you know, like, yeah, that might, I mean, okay, not that coconut oil causes cancer, but coconut oil as a dietary fat is not going to be the best one for everyone, but that doesn't mean it's evil for everyone either.
Right. Absolutely. So I think for both of the books, like with Ketotarian, I wanted to bring like the plant-based community into the middle and then the keto community into the middle and people that are disillusioned to a sustainable middle as well. I think that there's so many deep like components to that. I mean, the tribalism in our culture is tearing us apart, and that's happening on a political level. It's happening on a societal and social media level. It's happening on a food level. And if it's happening on a food level, we have a problem.
Yeah.
We're talking about breakfast, lunch, and dinner, not like trade wars. So I think that the problem is that we have this very malignant, if I could use that word, societal problem of tribalism. And I think that the middle, it's like, maybe to our culture it seems boring, but actually the middle is sustainable. The middle is life. The middle is balance. That's what the middle is. It's balance. And if you lose the balance, then it's unsustainable. It'll last for a little bit and then it fades away, and you'll just add it to your pile of things that you've tried or thought or felt or believed in, but isn't sustainable. So I think that it's definitely important, because the middle is balanced. The middle is not, you know, mundane. The middle is actually where sustainable, vibrant wellness resides.
Right. And that's so much of where everyone says that they want to go, but they don't want to take that like long-term sustainable approach to get there. They like want it right now, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it depends on who you talk to, right? It's so relative, because I'm sure there are some people out there that would still consider what I've talked about as being radical. So you're never going to please everybody. But I agree, in the space of wellness, I'm probably more of the measured folks as far as the ones talking about, because again, it goes back to me consulting patients and realizing there's so much nuance to human biochemistry and just people in general.
Right, exactly. So then, speaking of trying to find that middle ground and that balance, one thing that I noticed in the verbiage of this book that's different from the last one is you're actually talking more about finding your food freedom. So that, what does that mean to you in the context of this book?
Well, I think that we live in an age, like I just mentioned, where we are immersed with this conflicting information on Dr. Google, where people can substantiate their worst fears by just a click of the fingers, or substantiate their long-held view of thing they want to prove with a click of the finger. So I think that there's a lot of this sort of dieting dogma and subsequent food shame around the space of wellness, and it's creating a rising epidemic of orthorexia, which is stress, like shame about eating healthy, and it's amplifying a larger eating disorder spectrum, where it's not a full-blown eating disorder necessarily, but it is some sort of disordered relationship with food. It's some disordered relationship with your body because of this amount of information that's out there, content on content in the world. And then you have the FOMO-inducing content of social media too. So this is a confluence of factors that I see people are getting, are really disillusioned with diets and food and what works and what doesn't. So I really wanted the message of the inflammation spectrum is not only, of course, educating people on the concept of the inflammation spectrum, what that means, but empowering them with just measured, research-backed, practical things you can do in your life to start to reclaim your health. So that's where the inflammation spectrum like ethos came from for me, because people are, I think we're at really just at the beginning of like a post like diet disillusionment era where people are going to be like so wanting to keep it simple, but also wanting to find out for themselves what works for them, because there's so much information. People are going to be forced to do some self-experimentation to really find out what works for them on an individual basis, to find that food freedom. Because people, like, we don't need another diet. We need to find out how to use foods to feel great. So when I talk about food peace or food freedom, that's really what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's great. And I really like what you said, and this is something that I try and hark on a lot in the podcast, and I'm sure you get this with patients all the time, is that people are now coming to us having absorbed all of the information from so many different diets and fads, and like you said, becoming disillusioned, but then not knowing how to take the next step because there is so much that's kind of clouding their brains. And if you don't have an advanced degree, or even if you do, it's like, okay, well then how do I make sense of all of this for what it works for me, for my genetics, for my health history, for my lifestyle, my preferences, all those things. And I'll get clients that will come to me and be like, well, I watched this documentary and I've heard all these things and I have a friend who did this and the science seems to work for all of it. So how the heck do I figure out what to eat? And I really like how you're giving people a template of basically a quiz that you can go through, and then it's okay, figuring out what's actually going on in my body and then how can I cater to my own body's needs, not based on like one anti-inflammatory diet, as you will see like all over the place, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, so many ways to do an anti-inflammatory diet, or so many ways to do an elimination diet. And the carnivore diet is a form of the ultimate elimination diet. You're removing just about everything. And then there is more plant-based elimination diets. There's more, you know, like pescatarian. There's so many ways to do an elimination diet. So I wanted to take my functional medicine principles in there to find out what's specific for you. So the quiz is adapted from questions that I ask patients, and they can find out where they're at on the inflammation spectrum. And then from there, they can kind of dig into all of these sort of nuanced things that I've seen really move the needle in a powerful way in people's lives. And then a big component of the inflammation spectrum, in my mind, are all the non-food components too, because you can't just be eating super healthy. And that's not the entirety of the picture. So we talk about the non-food inflammers too, which I believe you also should be working towards of eliminating, or at least having a reckoning on if it's serving you or sabotaging you.
Right, exactly. And then throwing more nuance into the equation, because we started to mention this before, of this whole like disordered eating spectrum, then as clinicians, it's even harder because we'll get people who come to us who are somewhere along this, you know, from yo-yo dieting to full-blown eating disorder, who then have this inflammation going on or an autoimmune disease or something else like that. And so it's really hard to figure out, okay, well, for them, we know that there are certain protocols that will work for people who don't have this history of, say, a complicated relationship with food. So how can we kind of find that middle ground of knowing these evidence-based protocols that will probably work for someone else, but then knowing that this current client or patient has some kind of issues around food that if we just gave them that protocol, it could be actually triggering for them.
Yeah, and that's definitely interwoven throughout the whole book, because like for every statistic and clinical nutrition and like practical like health step for people to start to feeling better physically, I also wanted to interweave this sort of grace and lightness that's such a central part of my work and central part of me consulting patients, of what's the context of which we're even doing the food changes. Like, what is our relationship with food? What's our relationship with our body? Where is our head and our heart health, proverbially speaking? What is the metaphorical, where is our heart at on these issues? Because if you're coming in with this, with your baggage of disordered eating or shame for yourself, or using food as a form of stress eating or emotional eating or punishing your body in any way, shape, or form, that is antithetical to why we're doing what we're doing. So I actually think, and this is a conversation I have throughout the book, like, is where's your perspective, and do you need a paradigm shift on why you're even doing things? Because to me, I think the genesis of sustainable wellness is loving your body enough to feed it good things. And I know we talked about that on last episode, but it's such a bigger point of the inflammation spectrum, because it's just very important when you're talking about food piece and fighting, you know, what works for your body, what your body loves, your headspace and your heart space is such a major component to that. Because if you're stressed and, you know, filled with shame around food or in your life, that is it the food or is it the stress and the shame? Like, you need to create a foundation that is even open to healing, to see the changes you're looking to see. So it's not just about the macros and the micros and the food choices and the food medicines and avoid these and eat these. It's not that. It's not just that. That is a very incomplete view of how somebody feels the way that they do and their quality of life itself. So it's definitely a central part of the book, and I want people to be questioning themselves through this and really having like a come to Jesus moment with themselves on why they're doing what they're doing. And while it's not obviously a mental health book, I mean, and some people need to be seeing a therapist appropriately or seeing a specialist in that disordered eating space, and maybe they need to do that before they do anything with food. Certainly there are certain people that would be the case for. But then because it's a spectrum of disordered eating, I think a lot of people can just hear those words and really have this catharsis for themselves to say, look, this was an aha moment for me, and I'm going to really shift my perspective on why I'm even doing this. And there is this infusion of grace and lightness from the very next meal that they're having, because they just, it never clicked with them in that way. So hopefully, and that is the case so far, what I've seen on social media, people screenshotting certain segments of the book with those very truths that I see with patients. So it's exciting to see it unfold.
Yes, I love that. And I think what also makes this so tough is that, especially in the past couple of years, when you've been hearing more of the, you know, less and less of the like overt diet dogma, right? And more of the like, you know, food is medicine and stuff like that, is we're all so willing to try anything with our food, whether it's restricting or an elimination protocol or any of these things, to try and figure out like, this is the answer to what's been going on. And yet, on the one hand, people don't think of, you know, what is basic, like, why am I willing to make all of these food choices, but why am I not willing to examine why I'm wanting to make these food choices in the first place, right? Because for some people, it's reaching out for an aspect of control because they feel like their whole life is out of control, or we don't realize that the food on your plate can also like can create a stressor and inflammation in your body in multiple ways. In physical ways, if you have a sensitivity or intolerance or allergy to that food, but also if you have this shame and guilt around the specific food choices that you're eating, that can also cause different kinds of inflammation in the body.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. What is your relationship with that meal? Like, is it creating the stress inducing? Are you like gritting your teeth just to get through it? Those are going to elicit a different physiological response if someone's eating it in peace and eating it calm and sitting down when they're eating and enjoying it and having social connection when you're having that. Those are all variables that need to be talked about. So that is, you know, part of the component to those non-food inflammers. It's looking at stress, it's looking at social isolation, it's looking at screen time and people's relationship with technology, because I see those things impacting people on an almost hourly basis consulting patients, that it's really beyond food that the things we need to look at too, because they are obviously independent impactors of our physiology, but they also impact the food choices that people make as well.
Right. And like, not even going into the digestive piece of physiologically, like what happens when you're stressed out and eating at the same time, right? But then last time when you were on the podcast, we talked about how you can be eating, you know, the best or the healthiest diet, but if your body is too stressed, you're not actually going to reap the benefits from the healthy food that you're eating. And then going kind of further this time with what you've been talking about in the book, that we might even have inflammation going on even if, say, someone is in that kind of tending towards orthorexia, or if they're only eating healthy, clean food or whatever. So how does that happen? Like, how could someone have inflammation going on if they're only eating healthy food?
Well, two different main ways. One way is that just because something's healthy doesn't necessarily mean it's physiologically like right for them. Meaning, when you have intestinal permeability or leaky gut syndrome, there could be a whole host of quote unquote healthy foods that may not be right for you. So that's definitely, from a physical, like functional medicine, clinical nutrition standpoint, a conversation we're having in the inflammation spectrum. Because we talk about the core four, we talk about the eliminate, like these foods that are all, for all intents and purposes, most of them are whole foods. They are from the farm and from the garden. They're not necessarily bad things, but for some people they are problematic, and for some people they aren't. And we talk about the different genetic SNPs, like the methylation SNPs and the endocannabinoid ECS gene variants, that make some people just genetically more prone to these food reactivities and reactivities to lectins and the proteins in these foods. Not everybody has that. So there is the whole umbrella of whole foods. What works for one person will look different for the next person under that umbrella. The commonality is it's whole foods, it's real foods. We start there. But then from there, the food choices and the macros for that purpose as well, the micros and the macros and the food choices itself will all be independent depending on who you're talking to. So there's that component of the diet may just, the way that you eat may not be optimal for you. And that's definitely an exploration that you will be able to have through the inflammation spectrum book. But then secondly, it's going back to the other point. It's what is that person, what else is going on that is also impacting their physiology? So stress can drive inflammation, poor sleep. Just one night of poor sleep has been shown in studies to increase high sensitivity C-reactive protein, hsCRP, which is a biomarker that we run to kind of see inflammation levels. And looking at toxicity and the things that people are using in their homes, that can drive inflammation levels up. And then looking at screen time and technology and blue light and the impact that's having on circadian rhythms and sleep quality too, and just stress. And then the content that people are looking at all day long, and that's impacting them too from a stress standpoint. So there's a lot of variables to consider, which maybe me rattling that out can overwhelm some people. But we put it in a really digestible manner throughout the book. So you're leaning into things, you are picking up what you're ready to pick up, and you are leaving what you are not ready to pick up. So it's really not as punitive. You have to have all, we have to have it all figured out to get it sorted out. Definitely not the case. As long as we're leaning in and we're progressing, even if we're progressing slower than what you think you should progress, as long as it's sustainable, it's actually not slow at all. Because I'd rather somebody progress slowly but do it sustainably than progress fast and have it be sabotaged. So that's definitely my heart throughout that book.
Right, which is then so different and such a good change from the kind of perfectionism mentality that we've all been taught to pursue when it comes to food and when it comes to even things like entrepreneurship and when it comes to things like life, you know, where we feel like we have to do everything perfectly. Like we have to do this elimination diet 100% or we're not going to see the results, you know, or we feel like we have to cut out all these foods or I'm still going to have all of the inflammation. And so it's really, I think, comforting for people to hear that, like, you don't have to do everything perfectly, because for a lot of people, that focus on perfectionism could actually be causing some of the stress that's preventing them from healing and really finding that sustainable approach to healing as well.
Absolutely. This is, these principles that I just have been talking about is so, it's more applicable. It's applicable more than just to food and health. It is applicable to everything in life. You have to have a grace and lightness to the to life itself. And that's what wellness is. We like to like relegate it just to food or, you know, exercise or mindfulness. It's life itself. All wellness is what is your relationship with life itself. So I think that that applies to jobs and to career and all the things that you mentioned too, because it's just about balance and it's about a healthy relationship with the world around us.
Right, exactly. And then speaking of like learning to tune into that and find that balance and like really listen to what your body is trying to tell you with all these different kinds of inflammation and the feedback that it's giving you from foods, you talk in the book about lowering inflammation in order to be able to hear that intuition.
Oh,
can
yeah.
you talk about that a little bit more?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I want people to get to a place of intuitive eating and food peace. But when someone's imbalanced and physiologically imbalanced, meaning they have inflammation and then they have subsequent maybe microbiome imbalance or hormonal imbalance, or just feel because of the inflammation, they just feel off. There's a lack of centeredness. There's a lack of clarity and discernment on what's even right for their body. So there's food confusion. And there's food disillusionment. So people are confused on what to eat. So to have intuitive eating, to have discernment, you have to calm things down and create centeredness. So that is the whole plan in the book, is to create, let the dust settle, let the storm pass, let the inflammation storm pass. So you can then see the light and know which way's up and which way's down as far as food choices, as far as your relationship with the world around you, like activities and all of that stuff that impact our physiology. Now, because if you don't have that, it's really hard to discern between intuition and hangriness, or intuition and emotional eating, or intuition and stress eating. Because emotional eating is not intuitive eating. Stress eating is not intuitive eating. Hangriness is not intuitive eating. So people think, well, my body just craves that soda, or my body just craves that cookie. I'm just following with what my body tells it to do. Well, is that really intuitive eating, or is that just a blood sugar roller coaster that is causing insatiable cravings? You can have it. That's not what true intuitive eating is, which is actually from a place of centeredness. So you really know what will fuel you and make you feel great. Because the food that makes you feel lousy afterwards or perpetuates the problem of inflammation or hormonal imbalances, whatever the case may be, isn't ultimately serving you. It's just part of the problem. So people have to actually create that connection or restore their connection with themselves again, so they can have that food piece that I'm talking about.
Yes, exactly. And it's so important that you bring that up too, because I think there's like a larger community that's growing that's kind of taking what intuitive eating was, you know, originally designed to be and kind of co-opting it and saying like, oh, intuitive eating just means, you know, eat whatever you want. And like, it doesn't matter because it has no physiological consequences and all foods are interpreted the same in your body, when we know that that's not true, right? So like, yeah, on a physiological level, on a stress level, on an inflammation level, on everything. And so I really like this approach because it then allows you to really figure out, okay, when I have this craving, if I don't have the inflammation, if I don't have all of these things that are kind of like clouding my physiology and also clouding my judgment around food, then I can really figure out, okay, is it a craving because I'm on a blood sugar roller coaster? Is it a craving because I'm dealing with all these inflammatory things? Or is it a craving because like, I just want a freaking cookie, you know? But yeah, like, if you don't have all of those kind of clouds removed, you can't really make that truly informed decision as to like, what is that craving really telling you?
Exactly. So I want people to get to, because from there you can, if you choose to eat the cookie, you'll probably pick a better alternative cookie. You'll probably pick a cookie that still tastes amazing, but isn't going to throw you off like the thing you're grabbing impulsively. But even if you do, whatever cookie you grab, it's going to be done rationally and you can eat it, see how it makes you feel and move on. And it's no beating yourself up. It's no rehashing it in your mind. It's no shaming yourself or like flogging yourself for doing that. It's okay. Let's use that as information for next time. So it's all from a place of centeredness and discernment. And that's a place of power, really, and a place of peace and freedom.
Yeah. And I think with all of this, it's so important to think about that when we're approaching all of this information and trying to figure out what our bodies are telling us, whether it's interpreting information that we're getting from eating a food or from a symptom that we're having, it's kind of cultivating this mindset of curiosity, like you were saying, rather than shame or guilt or, you know, now I ate this, so like diet has to start tomorrow. And I think as a functional medicine practitioner, it's very important to kind of build in those, whether you want to call them roadblocks or obstacles that your clients are going to have to go around, because we'd be lying if we said, you know, you're going to try this and then everything will be butterflies and rainbows forever, right? You're definitely going to hit obstacles along the way. And so it's our job as practitioners to kind of arm you with the knowledge to say, okay, this might happen. And here's a way that you can like get around this. You know, you don't have to start over again. Because I think that's where a lot of the kind of spiraling on the disordered eating spectrum comes in there, is for so long we've been trained in this kind of diet mentality that you're either on the diet or you're off the diet. I mean, look where we are now. We're just like around the holidays time and people are either, I'm going to try and not eat any of the holiday treats or whatever, I'm just going to eat all of them. And both ways end up in people having these kind of like binge eating and binge drinking spells that then lead them to feel like absolute crap and probably have a lot of inflammation going on too.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, it's so true. So, I mean, and that brings up a larger point, is that you cannot, like, if you're waiting for the right time to do something good for yourself, the time is now. So don't wait till like after the holidays or after this season of your life or this whatever anniversary. There's always going to be another party. There's always going to be another celebration. There's always going to be things to do in your life. I see that so many people procrastinate to like really check in with themselves. And I don't mean like doing a diet. I mean like have like a really heart to heart with yourself to see like, how are you living your life? How are you going to move through this next day? Don't don't look ahead to the future and plan for some perfect utopian time, because it probably won't happen. It doesn't happen for most people. So you just have to take, where are you at in this present moment, and what's your relationship with this present moment? So that's why such a central part of the Inflammation Spectrum book is this sort of mindful approach to meals as medicine, but also to the day itself, because the every day is really another opportunity to feed inflammation or fight it. Every food we eat is another way to feed inflammation or fight it. So it's really not about this big thing that you have to like get all sorted out overnight. It's about what's the next thing at hand, and what's your new relationship with the present moment going to look like?
Yeah. And also, how can you approach that from a place of compassion rather than a place of beating yourself up for the choices that you may have made?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we just need to dump that dieting dogma. I mean, it's never served anybody, really. I mean, it's not. I mean, it's so...
It's only served the diet industry to make money.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But it's so archaic, and people are waking up to the fact that it's not really going to be a good thing to keep doing that. And I think we're living in an age when people are waking up. It's the ultimate dichotomy, right? I mean, I think in some ways people are actually really asleep. But I think there's a growing amount of people that are waking up to the fact that we have to do something different to see something different. And that whole definition of insanity, of doing the same thing repeatedly and expecting a different result, we are waking up to that fact that, look, let's be more sensible. Let's be more awoken, because you're right. Both sides are off. But one side is like, food has nothing to do with it. Like, it's like you can eat whatever you want, or just let's not even pay attention to that. To the other end of it, it's like, let's become orthorexic and obsessive about food and biohack our way out of everything. And I think that the middle of the road is where the majority of the world is going to find peace.
Right, exactly. So I'm loving this conversation, but I want to take it back a little bit to like the nutrition science and the biology, because we've been talking about inflammation a lot, but just kind of like this big giant cloud that's very vague, right? So I would love to talk about the different ways that inflammation manifests in the body, like in the different types of systems that you talk about.
Sure. So the concept of the inflammation spectrum, I actually talked about it in Ketotarian in my first book briefly, because beta hydroxybutyrate is the ketone that our body produces, is an epigenetic modulator and lowers inflammation and does a lot of other cool things too. So we talk about this concept of this spectrum of inflammation, from mild symptoms like mild fatigue, background anxiety, maybe some mild digestive problems on one end of the inflammation spectrum, and then full-blown autoimmune conditions and hormonal problems, diabetes, heart disease, cancer on the other end of the inflammation spectrum, and then everything in between. So the inflammation spectrum book opens up with a quiz, which we talked about. It's adapted from questions that I ask patients. And then at that point, they can kind of see, okay, maybe the brain area was higher for me, or the hormone section was higher for me, or I have some signs that and there may be an autoimmune component. It's obviously subclinical, it's subdiagnostic, it's not a lab, but it is a way for people to see signs and symptoms that research shows are associated with certain things, and it gives them a guiding light to, okay, what are some action steps people can do? And we also talk about the labs in there too. If you're a good candidate for that, you may need labs too, and I showed what labs to ask to have run and how to interpret them and looking at the optimal ranges, and we obviously run those for patients too, remotely as well. So that's where the book opens up, because inflammation is really the commonality between just about every health problem. And you're right, the term inflammation, people know, hey, it's not good, and they think of it as like arthritis or like aches and pains or maybe like a migraine. And beyond that, it's kind of nebulous, and what the heck are they talking about? But chronic inflammation doesn't necessarily just equate to pain and migraines and achy joints and muscles. Inflammation, chronic inflammation, is associated with hormonal problems and blood sugar problems and weight loss resistance and autoimmune conditions, to even things that are in the mental health space. Anxiety and depression and brain fog and fatigue, there's a whole field of scientific literature referred to as the cytokine model of cognitive function. And cytokines are pro-inflammatory cells in our body. So it's basically looking how inflammation impacts how our brain works. And something that I've been talking a lot about with this book, so just getting this message out there, and something that we've talked about for a long time. Like, I've written articles about it for the past decade, but we like to separate mental health from physical health. But mental health is physical health. Our brain is in our body, and we need to be looking at the component of inflammation in mental health. And so inflammation is very important. Like, the things I just mentioned are just about are impacting just about everybody in the human race right now, sadly. And if it's not impacting you, it's impacting someone you love. So this is a book for everybody, because the statistics speak for themselves. A lot of people are going through these health issues.
I think it's so interesting that we've been talking about how we as a culture tend to separate mental health from physical health. And things have been kind of progressing more, let's say, in the past decade, as we're learning more about the gut-brain connection and how those are two, like, so interconnected. Brain health influences gut health, and gut health influences brain health. But we don't really think about how inflammation can really impact things like anxiety and depression. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So basically, inflammation is linked to anxiety and depression and fatigue. And the mechanism at play there is the brain has a protective sort of sheath or covering called the blood-brain barrier. And research is looking at how certain proteins and certain aspects of the body can pass through the blood-brain barrier, or things that can increase blood-brain barrier permeability. So one of the biomarkers that we run is homocysteine. And there's studies to show that homocysteine, which is an inflammatory marker, above 7 has been shown to with increased blood-brain barrier permeability and act as a neurotoxin, and what they call leaky brain syndrome. So something that's, you know, as someone can have leaky gut syndrome or increased intestinal permeability, they also can have leaky brain syndrome or increased blood-brain barrier permeability. And the mechanism is basically increased permeability of the blood-brain barrier and some sort of activation of the microglial cells, which is the brain's immune cells. So it creates sort of this brain on fire, and it's a spectrum. You can have mild inflammatory responses or mild inflammatory components to, you know, people with some neurological symptoms, and then all the way to the other end, which is full blown, like, neurological autoimmune conditions, and then everything in between. So that is definitely something that you can quantify. You can obviously quantify homocysteine, but then specifically you can measure occludin and zonulin and other blood-brain barrier permeability biomarkers on blood labs, and also measure antibody production to neurological tissue too. And those are labs that we run for patients to kind of see, is there a neuroinflammatory component to your case or not? I mean, there may not be, because it's multifaceted. I can't just relegate and say what, and oversimplify it and say, well, it's just that, but it is definitely a component for a lot of people. And it's not just me looking at it on a clinical level, or us in functional medicine looking at it on a clinical level, which it's being done and we see it all the time. But it's also, you can see studies on PubMed and look at the what's being done out there in the different scientific journals of people looking at these inflammatory components to mental health problems.
So interesting. So let's say someone has had one or many of the countless health conditions and markers of inflammation that we've been talking about, right? What are, aside from buying the book, obviously, and reading it because it's great, what are some of the first steps that the listeners could take if they think that they're experiencing some of these things towards figuring out what that inflammation is, where it's coming from, and then what they can do to start learning how to heal it?
Well, it depends on where they're at headspace-wise. Like, we have a whole chapter in the book called Initiate, which is like leaning into things and not like having to figure it all out overnight.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that.
So, I mean, it depends on where you're at. Like, it depends on what you're ready for. But the Initiate chapter talks about leaning into things and starting with one thing at a time and going from there. So you could do it as simple as just limiting the amount of sugar you're having. We talk about what the core four in the book, and it's sugar, added sugar, grains, high omega-6 oils like vegetable oil, canola oil, and dairy. So those are what research shows to be inflammatory for a lot of people. Not, and it's the heart of the inflammation spectrum is bioindividuality. There are some people that can tolerate some of those in certain amounts and some in higher amounts, and they're fine. So, and we talk about the different nuance, like the different kinds, like is it the glyphosate on the grains and the sourdough bread versus conventional. There's definitely ways to get around it. So I'm not making a blanket statement on those foods, but those are some things to consider removing for a time, seeing how you feel, checking in with yourself, looking at stress, looking at your relationship with food, using food as medicine, loving your body enough to feed it good things during this time. And then there's a more advanced track called the eliminate track, which is the core four foods that I just mentioned, plus four more, which includes nightshades, which are a plant group that includes peppers and tomatoes and eggplants and white potatoes and goji berries and some spices, nuts and seeds, legumes, and eggs. Again, those are all whole foods. They are great for some people, not great for other people. So I would say do a little experiment for yourself. Remove those for a while and bring them back in. And I teach how to do the reintroduction, which is so important. And then you can see what your body loves and doesn't love. And you may find I do great on six of those food groups, but not the other two. Or I do great on like five of them, but not three of them. So we're all different. And we're going to find that little collection of data for yourself to find that clarity. And then it's not about a diet. It's about, no, I love feeling great more than I miss that food. And it's back to that food-centeredness, that food piece that we're talking about. So that's definitely what we're guiding people through that process. And we talk about these non-food inflammers through these weeks. So you can look at stress, you can look at social isolation and getting a community. And we could talk about screen time and the impact that that's having on inflammation. So it's this unfolding of this experience of things to consider. So you don't do everything all at once. You're leaning into it, but you're progressing.
Right. And checking in with yourself every step of the way and saying, like, is this working for me or is this too much? And then being, again, compassionate with yourself and knowing, like, okay, well, if you have this history of a complicated relationship with food, like, you might not be ready to make these food changes because that might be a little bit too much for you. So then I really like that you provide the option of, okay, let's look at these non-food triggers. Like, are you lonely? What is your screen time like? What is your social life like? You know, all these other things that can do so much for both our mental and physical health without even having to touch food. But then realizing that, okay, that's an area that I should probably go talk to somebody about.
Yeah, totally. And there's a place for maybe seeing a functional medicine practitioner or seeing a therapist or seeing a specialist in that field. Yeah, it's totally true. But oftentimes people have to start off with themselves to kind of see where they're at so they can make that educated decision on seeking help when they need that.
Yeah, for sure. So last time I asked you about a book recommendation, aside from your own, obviously, and you gave me A New Earth, which was fantastic. So I would love another book recommendation that maybe has been new to you in the past year that you've either been recommended to everybody or you've been really loving yourself.
Oh, cool. When you start saying that, I'm like, I bet I said A New Earth or I definitely love Eckhart Tolle. For people that haven't read A New Earth or Power of Now, both of his books, I think they're both like very important reads for the human race at this point in life. But if you're looking for something less maybe spiritual or conceptual, a practical book that I really like, which is completely different than Eckhart Tolle, is it's someone that we had on Goopfellas called, or I don't know when this episode will come out. Maybe we haven't, the episode hasn't aired yet. So the
Sneak
episode
peek
will
for
be coming.
everybody.
Yeah, that's right. So episode's not air out yet, but it will be at some point, depending on when you're listening to this. So by Joanne Lippmann, who has had an amazing career. She's like worked her way up through the Wall Street Journal. She was like the head of the Wall Street Journal. Then she was the head of Condé Nast, which is like the main magazine company where like Vogue and all these make. And then she was also the head of USA Today. Like she's a big deal in the literary world. And she's brilliant. And we had her on Goopfellas, and she talked about her book called That's What She Said, which sounds like a book of like dirty jokes,
I love that.
but it's not because the subtitle is like basically, this isn't verbatim, but the subtitle is basically how men and women can work better together. And it's such a fantastic book for men and women to read, and talking about unconscious bias and talking about simple practical steps people can do in their life. It's just being a better human. And the statistics in the book are insane. Like, I knew there was obviously discrimination for women in the workplace, and even worse for women of color in the workplace. But I was like, my eyes were really opened in this book. And she, because she's such a great writer, it's done in a way that's very engaging, and it allows the information to actually permeate your consciousness way more than if it was just like very dry statistics. So very important book, a very practical book too.
That sounds really cool. I will definitely make sure to include that in the show notes. So thank you so, so much for coming on. Please tell people where they can find you and all of your practice stuff on social media and your book.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me again. Everything's at drwillcole.com. That's drwillcole.com. We offer a free webcam or phone health evaluation. We recently launched an online group class for functional medicine. I'm really pumped about that. They can get all that information at drwillcole.com. They can pre-order the books there, order the books there. We have the inflammation spectrum quiz actually on the website too, if people just want to take it for free on the website. And then, Goop Fellows comes out every Wednesday, and on Instagram, it's at Dr. Will Cole again.
Awesome. Well, thank you again.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Real Talk with Dana. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your family and friends, and share the love by throwing us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, which will help spread the word and do a small part to correct all of the fitness and nutrition misinformation or bullshit that's out there, which is only causing people to become more unhealthy. Come find me anywhere at Real Food with Dana on Instagram and Facebook. Join the Real Talk with Dana Facebook group for more support and discussion on these episodes, and come hang out over on realfoodwithdana.com for the show notes and totally epic and delicious recipes.